Today I'd like to talk about how the five faculties work together in our practice. And in a way, I'm glad that we have this opportunity to kind of revisit the faculties, because it seems to me that a lot of practice unfolds in these cycles or in these ever-deepening spirals, that we understand something at one level. We may go through an understanding in our practice, in our reflection of how some qualities work and how the teachings are applied to our practice. And then in doing that practice, applying those teachings, there's a deepening of understanding, a deepening of wisdom that happens, and then we can revisit the teachings and move yet another layer deeper into the understanding. So today I'd like to talk about the work, how these five faculties work together, and from two different perspectives. The first perspective I'd like to offer is how these five faculties support us as we work with difficulty. And the second aspect I'd like to talk about is the more the general functioning of the five faculties in our practice. So in terms of working with difficulty, yesterday Gil read this beautiful excerpt from the texts about the practice, part of the practice being to understand and to abandon these defilements. Knowing that there are defilements, the mind abandons them, understands them, and abandons them. And this abandoning was said to lead then to what Gil called the confidence of knowing, which I thought was beautiful, a beautiful way to express this kind of looping back, essentially, of the faculties on themselves. And so I'd like to explore a little bit about how the faculties work, these faculties that we've been working with, how they work to help us to do this, to abandon the defilements. How does it work anyway? And to do this, what I thought I would do is to pick a state that is kind of common or one that people struggle with from time to time, and explore how the faculties come into play in working with that difficulty. So the exploration I'd like to make then is around working with fear, worry, anxiety, flavors of that. And partly why I want to talk this way is because I want to really point out how these faculties support us in working with difficulty, but also how they are cultivated, how they are supported by the practice, so that the very cultivation or employment or use of these faculties actually begins to strengthen them, and that the recognition, beginning to recognize these qualities at work in our minds, is actually an important part of the practice. And even as we're working with something that's really difficult, we can see the beautiful qualities that are at work. So even as we're working with fear, we can see how faith comes into play, how confidence comes into play. We can see how energy and mindfulness come into play. So as we've been talking this week, the first of the five faculties, generally taught as faith, and I find that it's helpful to, in thinking of these as a cycle, you know, as we've seen how faith supports energy, supports mindfulness, supports concentration, supports wisdom, which in turn supports a deeper faith, how they feed back on each other in a cycle. In a way, I want to start tonight by looking at not faith in per se about what we need to have confidence in around working with fear, but the first thing I want to look at is, what do we need to understand? What kind of wisdom do we need to understand? What is the perspective? What is the view? What is the understanding we need to bring to our confidence, to our energy, to our mindfulness? And this is supported in a way by the understanding, which I've mentioned a couple times in brief, that this aspect of wisdom has different levels to it. There's the level at which we hear a teaching. We take in information from some other source, from a teacher, from a Dharma talk, from a recording, from a book. So we're just kind of taking that information in. That's part of the faculty of wisdom, the functioning of wisdom. We have to receive teachings. And then with that, having received those teachings, then we have to kind of massage that in our mind, understand how it makes sense to us, how we can consider working with it, practicing with it. And this is the second kind of aspect or layer of wisdom, the layer of reflecting on, working with the teachings that we have received. And then the third layer of wisdom is the layer which, having engaged in those first two, so with the hearing, receiving the information, and then engaging with it, we then begin to understand it for ourselves. And this is where the confidence of knowing, having seen for ourselves the value of the teachings, we have a direct understanding. And this is the third kind of wisdom. This is the kind of wisdom that frees us, that leads to understanding, to direct understanding. So these first two kinds of wisdom, the wisdom of learning, the wisdom of reflecting, massaging it in our minds, in a way, that's how the practice gets started in the first place. We have to hear something and reflect on, well, that makes sense to me. Maybe I want to work with that. So we begin our practice by receiving information and by reflecting on it. So what is it that, in terms of the working with fear or anxiety, what is it that we need to understand? What are the tools? What do we need to understand about fear? So there's some kind of specific things to understand about fear. One perhaps just being there are many different kinds of fear. There's the real primal kind of fear that can come when your life is immediately in danger. And that, the few times, maybe once or twice in my life I've experienced that, that does not seem to be a hindrance towards presence of mind. In fact, you come right into here and now when that happens. And so that's not really the kind of fear that is necessarily a problem or a hindrance. Then there's another kind of fear. I could call generated fear. You know, it's fear that comes about out of thought, out of ideas, out of often thinking about the future, what's going to happen, and how am I going to be, and am I going to be okay in the future? So that is kind of a generated fear. It's generated by thoughts, by ideas, by our relationship to experience from the past, how that all comes together. This is really the area of fear, which also taps into the areas of worry and anxiety, that the practice can really meet this kind of fear. Then the other interesting thing to reflect on is that there's a kind of a, I don't know that fear is quite the right word for it, But there's a kind of a skillful recognition or a skillful sense of hesitancy or a sense of, is this something I want to do? You know, that sort of, if I engage in this action, it's kind of a sense, almost a fear of the consequences of wrongdoing, or a sense of the repercussions of wrongdoing, and almost just sense of that's not the way to go. You know, that can almost be a kind of fear. That actually is understood to be a skillful quality of mind, a recognition that there is a wholesome kind of fear of the consequences of unskillful activity. So in terms of understanding that there's different kinds of fear, then part of our wisdom that comes into our reflection is what kind of fear is helpful to work with in the practice? What kind of fear is helpful to actually say, oh, this is something that's skillful to act on, or this is something that's not necessarily skillful to act on? So that there's a distinction. And Gil was talking about this, that the wisdom is what makes distinctions. So primarily in talking about working with difficulty, the difficult aspect of fear, I'm referring to this, what I call generated fear, coming from thoughts, from ideas, from perhaps emotional responses to things. So this kind of fear often brings a sense of unease, a sense that something's not right. And this is dukkha, essentially. It's a sense of stress, dissatisfaction, of unease, maybe as far along the range of that as out-and-out suffering. And what is it that the Buddha asked us to engage with around suffering? His teaching, his wisdom that he came to around suffering is that it should be understood. Not that it should be reacted against. Not that it should either be indulged in or repressed, but that it should be understood. So this kind of fear, this kind of fear that brings this suffering, needs to be understood. So this teaching, this understanding fear, what does that mean? That means turning towards what's happening here and now, rather than having our attention directed outward in the world towards what fear seems to be based on. And that can be a challenge for us. You know? Rather than having our attention on the thing that we're afraid of, turning towards the fear itself. And this is the general movement of mindfulness. So this understanding of that the Buddha spoke of, understanding suffering, is a direct understanding that he's pointing to, not an intellectual understanding. So it's helpful to meet our difficulties, helpful to come into touch with them, not repressing them and not acting on them, but meeting that energy, meeting that difficult energy. It's also helpful to understand, to have some wisdom, some discernment about when can our mindfulness meet this difficult energy and when is it too much. We've talked about this from time to time during the week, that if it feels like the mindfulness is being swamped by the energy of the difficulty, really helpful to back off, helpful to put your attention someplace else. So understanding, being discerning about when it's helpful to put our attention on the difficulty and when it's helpful to turn towards something else. Another key piece of wisdom around any difficulty is that it is a product of causes and conditions. It's not random. It comes about because of things that have happened. There are many, many causes and conditions that come together to bring something into being. And so, what are some of the causes and conditions for fear? Some of it has to do with our past. This is what we could call conditions. You know, we were treated in a certain way in the past. The conditions of our lives may, for instance, if we were mistreated by someone when we were a child, and then we're walking down the street one day, and we see somebody that has roughly the same body shape of the person who mistreated us, there may be some fear arising. So there's the conditions of the past and the associations of that situation that can lead to the fear arising here and now. So we begin to understand the cause and effect nature. And as we begin to understand the cause and effect nature of our difficulties, we begin to see that we don't have to be ruled by those causes and conditions. We can begin to kind of tease apart, like in this case, the mind can begin to understand that this person here is not the same as that person who mistreated me. You know, it's here and now, there and then. It's not the same person. And the mind can begin to understand different conditions now. This is not, fear is not necessary now. And this can be a very slow process, of course. So fear can result from thoughts, from emotions. It can be generated almost at a pre-verbal level. And because fear is generated from causes, and actually one of the key pieces of wisdom that's been very meaningful for me in understanding is that when suffering is created, and when suffering comes into being, so fear comes into being right now, and a lot of times it is connected with history. It is connected with something from our past, of how we relate to something that's happening now. And something that I really, really have appreciated in the teachings is the understanding that when suffering is arising now, when fear is arising now, it's not that it's all the old fear from the past and all the conditions from the past that are somehow, stored in the mind and body system that are just being dredged up. Actually, the fear is being created now based on conditions that are happening, reactivity and conditions that are happening now. So the seeing of that person, for instance, with a particular body shape, triggers a memory here and now. A memory comes up here and now of that other person. And then the associations of that person who mistreated us get brought into the present moment through memories here and now. So all of it, all of the construction of that difficult state is happening right now. And because of that, actually, it's possible to begin to free ourselves from the way that's put together as we begin to see the cause and effect relationship. Then another piece of wisdom around difficult states. And we frequently identify with our difficult states. They seem so real, so much who I am in that moment. When fear arises, like it's my fear, we feel defined by it. And so part of the wisdom that the Buddha asks us to explore is, this is not me. This is not mine. This is not who I am. This is simply an arising phenomenon happening here and now based on causes and conditions coming together in this moment. It's not me. It's not mine. It's not who I am. So those are some of the wisdom teachings that we can reflect on, can bring into our practice as we begin to explore working with a difficulty such as fear. As we hear about the possibility of what this practice, these teachings can do for us in meeting fear, there may be some confidence that grows. At first, it's a kind of a borrowed confidence in a way that, you know, that you may hear from me or, you know, a teacher or a friend. Yeah, I tried this and it was really helpful. You know, I felt myself the way the mind let go of that fear. And so that may generate an interest, a willingness to explore the teachings for yourself. So this is that movement to confidence, confidence in the possibility, the benefit of the teachings, the possibility that it is useful to engage with turning towards fear rather than acting on it or repressing it. It's really helpful to recognize this sense of confidence as it manifests, as it comes up. And three ways I thought of, you know, that confidence feels in the early stages. You know, something along the lines of, yeah, that makes sense. This teaching resonates with me. Or maybe something along the lines of, for me, it was something along the lines of, well, I don't understand how that's going to work, but I'm willing to try it. Yeah, so the willingness to engage. Or a kind of a trust in somebody else's description. Oh, it's worked for them. Maybe it can work for me too. So learning to recognize that as confidence. You know, even as you're engaged with difficulty, you know, the willingness to engage, if you can connect with that feeling of willingness, that will support you. That is an aspect of that confidence. So connecting with that, recognizing this quality in your experience, even as you're observing something difficult. So the confidence in our ability to work with a difficulty such as fear brings about the energy. You know, if we're willing to engage, then that brings in the engagement. So the energy comes. Energy is directed towards the practice. So the energy in this case is directed towards observing, witnessing the fear. The energy might have been directed towards acting on the fear in the past. And so this is a key difference. This is how the wisdom informs the energy. The wisdom comes in and supports a turning towards the fear rather than acting on it or repressing it. And again, recognizing what it feels like to be engaged. That's a wholesome quality, that not only the willingness to be engaged, but the sense of engagement itself will support that faculty, the faculty of energy strengthening. So this energy can manifest, can be felt as a kind of a gentle persistence in the practice. And this is a way that we've been encouraging you to practice, not by bearing down on, not by pushing into, but gently, just gently, persistently meeting. So a persistent, gentle effort is a way that this energy is felt at times. And with that persistent, gentle energy, sometimes interest in the exploration. We can start to get interested in fear, interested in what's happening, rather than being kind of whipped around by the feeling of fear. It's more like, wow, look at that. There it is again. What was it this time? What was it that made it happen this time? So interest then, again, creates a sense of energy adds a boost to our engagement in the exploration of a difficulty such as fear. And this energy is directed towards the wise attention or wise mindfulness of the fear. This is the energy directed towards the practice. We can't really speak about energy in the abstract. The energy is connected right with the mindfulness and the wisdom. So we investigate the fear. We look at it with mindfulness. That energy is directed towards investigating, observing with mindfulness. So our basic mindful practice with something like fear is to turn towards it, look at it in the body, feel it. Neither repress nor act on. Again, not putting your attention out into the world, turning towards the fear. Letting go of thoughts around the fear. We've talked about that around working with difficulty. Over time, through this exploration of being willing to meet the fear with mindfulness, so cultivating now this faculty of mindfulness while engaging with fear, engaging with working with fear, we might begin to recognize what it is that's triggering this pattern of fear. And this is some of where the power of this practice comes in. That we start to see that there are kind of triggers that happen, present moment triggers. It's like we're minding our own business, making our breakfast, and suddenly, you know, fear arises, you know. And when we're not very mindful, it's almost like it just comes out of the blue. But when we're more present, when the mind is more present and seeing things, you might begin to see some associations. You might begin to notice that, you know, the way that you reached for your plate triggered a memory. And that memory was associated with a person that had some fearful energy around. You might begin to see how these triggers happen in your mind. So as we begin to see the triggers, we're beginning to see the cause and effect relationship. We're beginning to see essentially how these things arise as just simple. It's like impersonal patterns arising. It's not so much about me. It's this conditioning meeting this moment, these sense experiences, memories arising from that. It's all kind of just a process of natural unfolding. So we begin to see how it's not so much I did that, it's more a process that's unfolding. So this is some of the wisdom that begins to be more revealed to us as we practice. Another aspect of bringing our attention to something like fear, couple of pieces. One, which we've mentioned and I mentioned a little earlier, recognizing when it's not time to pay attention to it. You know, being mindful, being aware of when it's not a good time to turn directly to that experience, when to set it aside, turn to some other experience. And related to that is to begin to see that at times, I mean, this is something that happens a lot around difficult states, that we start to see patterns, we start to see that a lot, perhaps, we may get a little glimpse into our the way our mind is constructed and see, wow, so much of what's happening for me is based on fear. It's like I'm a fear machine. And, you know, even the way I, you know, look at somebody or want approval, it's based on a feeling of anxiety and a feeling of not having a sense of safety. So we begin to see that there's some underlying larger patterns at times. And sometimes in seeing that, in seeing that there's a kind of a pervasive pattern, we can get the agenda to like, okay, something's happening and I know that fear's underneath. You know, it's like, well, yeah, I'm feeling that sense of wanting somebody to look at me and I know that comes out of fear, so let me find the fear. You know, without necessarily feeling the fear, but kind of in your mind saying, I've seen that pattern before, so fear's under there somewhere, so I'm going to find it. That's not so helpful. You know, that kind of diving under and digging is kind of, it's almost not respecting that, how your mind is meeting here and now. So, you know, being willing to just notice what is happening here. Sometimes when we have a pattern like that also, there can be layers of resistance on top of it, for instance. So we might have a pattern of fear and have a sense of, oh, I don't really want to go to that fear, but I know I should. I know it's the middle of everything, so let me just bear through that resistance. Again, that's not so helpful. So to respect what's actually happening in the moment, in this case, if there's fear and resistance to fear, resistance to fear is present right now. And so this, in terms of wisdom and mindfulness functioning together in a difficulty, this is another key piece that we respect what is happening here and now. We don't deny or try to push through what's actually here and now. So resistance is happening here and now. Or, you know, you're paying attention to a knee pain and there's fear around that knee pain and resistance to that fear. You know, bearing into the knee pain is kind of not respecting both the resistance and the fear that are layered on top of it. So willingness to meet exactly what is happening. This is really a key part of the mindfulness practice. There's a term that the Buddha uses, yathābhūta, which roughly translated means either things as they are or things as they have come to be. That this is what we, how we meet our experience as it is, as it has come to be. One other piece in terms of our mindfulness practice, mindfulness and wisdom work together in working with difficulty, is at times, you know, and this is a way that, you know, sometimes we can't quite meet our experience. There's, you know, some of these states, you know, certain states of fear might be strong enough that it would be challenging to actually meet directly. And we have the option of turning to something else. And another option is to actually consciously bring in some what I might call borrowed wisdom. You know, some of the teachings that we've heard can be helpful to bring in that borrowed wisdom. For instance, if you're experiencing a state of fear, you might remind yourself, actually use reflection. This is impermanent. This is not me. It's not who I am. This is simply causes and conditions unfolding. You could bring in that wisdom. And sometimes I've seen, actually, I've used one statement, I've collapsed the statement of this experience is just a product of causes and conditions. It's arising right now as a result of causes and conditions. I've collapsed that into a statement offered by one of my teachers. This is nature. This is nature. It is just a nature kind of being, you know, what blooms based on conditions. This is coming into being now based on conditions. So this is nature. For me, when I've brought that reflection in, it's like it adds some space around the difficulty. So it allows the mind to then become more able to meet the experience when that perspective of wisdom is joined with the mindfulness. So that can be very helpful. Some of my favorites. This is impermanent. This is dukkha. That's another favorite of mine. You know, sometimes when I'm suffering around something, if I just remind myself, well, this is dukkha. You know, this is what the Buddha talked about. You know, it's like, it's not a mistake. It's what I meant to understand this. Oh, right. Oh, this is dukkha. Okay. That has helped me. Acceptance. Just that word, accept. 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 You know, that is, it brings in that sense of wisdom. So the bringing the mindfulness to our experience, to our fear, the willingness to explore, the understanding of when it's time to turn away, all of that brings a kind of continuity of attention, which cultivates concentration. So as energy and mindfulness come together to allow an investigation, the cultivation of mindfulness of fear, concentration begins to develop. The concentration, the mindfulness gets more stable around observing even a difficulty. And this is another bit of wisdom that I've seen, so grateful for seeing in my practice, that wisdom, understanding, concentration can develop even while difficulties happening. You know, it doesn't matter what we bring our mindfulness to. What matters is that we have as much balance in the mind in observing that difficulty. So fear is arising. Oh, it's fear. Fear is arising. Wisdom can arise. Insight can arise while observing that. One real key time I understood this, you know, I heard for years teachers say, it doesn't matter what you're paying attention to. I thought, yeah, they're just telling me that to make me feel like it's okay, that I'm not, you know, really concentrated here or something. And on one retreat, I was experiencing so much self-hatred that I just had to surrender. It's like, you know, I had the idea, well, you know, I've got to get past the self-hatred and then the practice can start. Then I can really start to practice Vipassana. But this self-hatred, that's in the way. And I finally just had to surrender. And it's like, this is my practice right now. And in the being with that experience of self-hatred over and over again, very, very deep insight into the whole way my mind was constructed. And concentration, strong concentration, strong mindfulness, strong wisdom arising while investigating self-hatred. That gives me such confidence that it just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what we're paying attention to. What's arising is our practice. And it's exactly what you need to be looking at right in that moment. And we need the wisdom to understand if we're getting swamped by it, when we need to be skillful about turning away. So the mindfulness and the concentration brings that capacity to deeply understand. So with fear, for example, you know, we're coming back to wisdom. I talked about what we needed to understand at the beginning, and now we're coming back to wisdom through the practice. And what is it that is seen? What is actually directly known in working with fear? How might we see the wisdom around fear How might it unfold? Just a few examples. You might experience a shift of perspective around the fear. You might experience a sense of, oh, this is just fear, as opposed to being kind of hooked into it and driven by it. So this fear can just simply be known, so there can be a sense of space around it. That might be one way that sense of wisdom arising into the fear. And then another key way that wisdom is directly seen, directly felt, is, in my experience, it happens through the willingness to observe a pattern arising over and over again. Over and over again, we watch fear arising. Each time we see it, we get a slightly different perspective on it. We see a little bit more about it. And there's a couple pieces there. The mind actually begins to learn that fear itself is suffering. And it begins to kind of, in attuning to that state, being willing to look at it over and over again, one of the things that seems to happen is that the mindfulness begins to get attuned to that experience. It gets to know what Carol Wilson said at one point. It gets to know the smell of it coming. And in that, we start to be able to see the conditions that are leading there before the fear is actually launched. And when that happens, then the mind, seeing it's kind of headed in the direction of fear, it senses the smell of fear coming. Having spent time observing the fear, recognizing deeply that is suffering, the mind may itself just begin to shift course. And that's been my experience, that it's not actually something I have to do or to choose or to say, oh, the smell of fear coming, oh, don't go there. It's more like the smell of fear coming, the mind knows that way lies suffering, and it just goes, I don't think so. Not going to go that way. That can begin to happen as we observe our patterns over and over again. So this wisdom develops. We directly experience this wisdom, which then feeds back to our confidence. We directly have the confidence ourselves that this works. This has been helpful for me. Which leads to more energy, which leads to more mindfulness, which leads to more concentration, which leads to a deepening of wisdom. So it's really helpful in an exploration of your practice to be cognizant of these factors, these faculties working as you practice. We feel the goodness of these qualities, even as something difficult is happening. And then I'd like to come from a slightly different perspective and just offer, these five faculties. I've talked about them kind of sequentially in this example. Although I did, kind of say at each time how, we bring wisdom in as we're practicing mindfulness. One of my teachers explores the five faculties, or looks at the five faculties as being how the five faculties are functioning together is what kind of constitutes our sense of awareness. Awareness is a term that we use kind of intuitively. What is awareness? And there's no actual word in the Pali canon, in the Pali texts, in the texts of the Buddha, the Buddhist teachings, that translates into awareness. There's some words that kind of come into the terrain. Mindfulness is one. Knowing is one. consciousness is one. These are words that are kind of in the terrain of awareness. But we have a kind of intuitive sense of what awareness is. I mean, we speak about it, you know, it's, and I think we use it because it does have a kind of intuitive feel to it. And in exploring this with my teacher, Sayadaw Utejaniya, he said, well, my definition of awareness is the functioning of how the five faculties are functioning together. And that began to open up a whole new interest in the five faculties to me, a whole new understanding of why it is that what I call awareness seems to feel different at different times. Because these parts that come together to make up awareness, the wisdom faculty, the energy faculty, the confidence, the mindfulness, and the concentration, they all have different levels at different times. So, well, for instance, there are times in our practice when we are working with a borrowed wisdom. As I mentioned earlier, you know, it's not that the wisdom is so deeply ingrained and we're having to remind ourselves of the wisdom. So wisdom is not terribly strong, perhaps. Then at that point, in the way our minds work, the way awareness works, the faculties of faith, of mindfulness and energy are called on to do the work of being here, of being present. So it feels like it takes work. It feels like the practice takes work. And in this part of practice, mindfulness, the faculty of mindfulness, helps to balance the other faculties. That wisdom and faith need to have a balance. And if we are just on the wisdom side without a sense of if we just have the idea that, oh, that sounds beautiful, listen to those teachings, they're fantastic, but the faith is not strong enough to actually impel us to act, you know, if the faith isn't there, then the wisdom's not going to go very far. And a faith without being balanced by wisdom is perhaps going to be veering off into maybe a more blind kind of faith, a faith that's not informed by discernment. And so the mindfulness kind of helps to keep those in balance. And likewise, energy and concentration need to be in balance. Energy tends to bring the level of energy tends to be something that brings the energy up, and concentration tends to settle, and these two need to kind of act in harmony. If we have too much energy, we may have restlessness. If there's too much concentration without the support of energy, we may just fall off into sleep. So the faculties of faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom need to begin to come into a balance. And initially, we need to perhaps explore them, recognize when wisdom is strong, faith is weak, when we need to encourage or incline a sense of confidence in our practice, when we need to settle the mind more with concentration or bring up the energy. As the practice develops, as wisdom gets stronger, then mindfulness and wisdom start to function more as a team. And energy and confidence feel like they're just being generated. You know, it feels like it doesn't take quite as much work. The practice feels more less effortful. So again, you know, the way these faculties function will create a different sense of our practice at different times. When the wisdom gets really strong, it feels like the practice is just going on its own. Like it almost feels like it doesn't take any personal effort at all. That the mind sees so clearly, it sees the arising of something, and the mind, with wisdom, understands completely how to be with that. And there's very little effort needed. So there's a very deep understanding at that point about how the mind constructs suffering, and how the mind, equipped with these, with this wisdom, with these five with the five faculties, can naturally release the causes of suffering. The feeling at this point is of ease, of balance, even joy in seeing how the mind frees itself as it sees how suffering is put together. So that there's not a continual progression from from the first low level of wisdom, where you're kind of making the work, doing the work, remembering to bring in the practice, engaging the energy, through to the place where mindfulness and wisdom are kind of partnering, and it feels more like a flow, to the place where it feels effortless. Not a steady progression between those. It's kind of more like the strength of these five faculties fluctuates from moment to moment, from day to day, from hour to hour. And you will go through times when it feels like work and times when it feels like it's easeful. And a form of wisdom, a form of discernment here, is that, we essentially need to recognize that it's not a mistake and it's not a problem when, if last sitting it felt completely effortful and this sitting it feels like it's chugging along and it's work again. You know, it's causes and conditions create this container of awareness, how these five faculties function together. And sometimes the energy is a little lower, sometimes energy, everything comes right into balance. As practice develops, one of the keys to practice developing is just to recognize, oh, it's like this right now. Okay, yeah. Need to make the effort. Need to bring in that gentle persistence. Need to cultivate that concentration. And not to beat ourselves up or think, what have I done wrong? It's just a very natural kind of ebb and flow of these five faculties. So it's like this right now. What is the level of effort that's needed to meet right now? What wisdom can support meeting right now? So these five faculties are very powerful forces in our practice. They really are the way that our practice, the skills of the meditation, they're the skills of our practice, as I said, I think, the very first evening. And so getting familiar with these skills, recognizing them, understanding them, seeing how they function, not taking it personally when there's an ebb and flow to these faculties. And just continuing, moment after moment, to meet experience. So let's just sit in silence together for a few minutes.